This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Now a hair growth product with natural ingredients and fast results. Reveal from GCNLife.com.
Black holes, the cosmos, space and time travel, science and technology. Brought to you by theoretical physicist, futurist, popularizer of science, and world-renowned author, Professor Michio Kaku.
At GCNLive.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. On Science Fantastic every week, we profile some of the most amazing developments in science and technology. And you know, we've had a number of Nobel Prize winners, number of leading thinkers talking about black holes, maybe even time travel, wormholes, all the stuff you see in the movies. But today, we're going to talk about the most mysterious, the most complex object in the known universe. We've scanned the heavens out to billions of light years. And the most complex object in the known universe is sitting on your shoulders right now, the human brain, with over 100 billion neural connections. And what about a metaphor? Is there a metaphor that helps to explain this most complex object? Well, the ancient Egyptians thought that the brain was useless, and they threw it away when they embalmed the pharaoh. During the Middle Ages, the mind became a battlefield. A battlefield between, on one hand, the devil and sin and temptation on one hand, and on the other hand, the land of the angels, the land of faith and salvation. Then during the Industrial Revolution, with the coming of the steam engine, Sigmund Freud comes along and says, no, the brain is a steam engine where pressure builds up in one area and can overwhelm all the valves and gauges in another part of the brain. And the steam engine had three parts to it. One part was the id, that is your basic sense of self, the superego, which is your guilty conscience, and your libido, that is desire. So the brain was a steam engine. And then with the coming of electricity, people said, no, the brain is a switchboard. Nothing but a gigantic switchboard, just like a telephone network. Then with the coming of digital computers and transistors, people said, no. The brain is a Turing machine with inputs, outputs, basic programming, all hooked together with transistors. Well, now we have yet another metaphor coming from the world of artificial intelligence. And we've had a number of those people on Science Fantastic. And they say, no. The brain is not a steam engine. It's not a telephone switchboard. It's not any of these things. The brain is a pattern-seeking learning machine. That's what it's all about. Well, with us today is Professor Lisa Feldman Barrett. She's a distinguished professor at Northeastern University with appointments at Harvard Medical School and Massachusetts General Hospital. And she's the author of a delightful new book that I highly recommend, 7.5 Lessons About the Brain. So today we're going to talk about the most mysterious object in the universe, the human brain. Well, Lisa, I just finished reading your book a few days ago, and the question naturally occurs then, what is the basic correct metaphor for the human brain? You mentioned something like energy budgets. Could you elaborate?
Sure. Thanks so much for having me on your show. I think that we can talk about the way the brain is structured, or we can talk about the way the brain is functions, or the way it works, or we can talk about its most important job. And its most important job from an evolutionary standpoint is to control the systems of your body. So brains didn't evolve to think or feel or see. They evolved to control the systems of an animal's body. And I describe this using the metaphor of a budget. So your brain is constantly running a budget for your body. It's not budgeting money. It's budgeting glucose and water and salt and oxygen and all of the nutrients that are needed to keep you alive and well, to perform nature's most important tasks, which is for you to pass your genes on to the next generation and have those offspring survive to reproduce themselves. And so you can think about every movement that you make, everything that you learn, every food that you eat, every hug that you give or receive, every kindness that you offer, every insult that you bear as a deposit or a withdrawal in that body budget.
Okay. Now, in your book, you mention in your first lesson, because you have 7.5 lessons, your first lesson is that the brain is one, not three. Well, there is a theory, which is actually rather popular, that says the brain is in basically three parts. The back of the brain is the reptilian brain, the oldest brain, the brain of territoriality, food, mating. That's the back of the brain. Then the center of the brain is the monkey brain, the limbic brain. That is the brain of social interactions, pack mentality, emotions. That's the center of the brain. And then the front part of the brain is the prefrontal cortex, which is the thinking brain. But you say that picture is outdated. Could you elaborate?
Sure. In ancient Greece, Plato told a story that was a morality story about what it means to be a moral human being. And his story described the human psyche, which we understand to be something similar to a human mind, as having three parts that he described as two horses and a charioteer. One horse stands in for instincts like freezing and fleeing and fighting and reproducing, what scientists call the four Fs. One horse represented emotion or passions, and these two represent your inner beast, which is in constant struggle with the charioteer, who represented rationality. And Plato's story was that when rationality controls your inner beast, you are moral. And when rationality fails to control your inner beast, and therefore you do and say things which are ill-advised, you're either immoral or, in modern terms, maybe you're not mentally healthy. And this morality story was basically stamped onto the anatomy of the brain in the mid-20th century. Because when you look at a lizard brain, it looks like it doesn't have a cerebral cortex. When you look at a rat brain, it looks like, you know, there's a very, very, very small cerebral cortex. And compare that to a monkey brain or a human brain where the cerebral cortex looks big. And so the assumption was that your brain, the human brain, evolved in layers. That first we have a lizard brain, which is supposed to contain the circuits for instincts. And layered on top of that evolved a limbic system, limbic meaning border, the tissue that borders the lizard brain, for emotions. And then layered on top of that is the cerebral cortex, which is important for rationality, particularly the front part, or what you termed prefrontal cortex. And certainly if you look at lizard brains versus rat brains versus human brains, you can see that to the naked eye, the structures look very different. But when you peer in deep into the molecular genetics of the cells, what you can see is that genetically, based on the genes contained in those cells, there are no new types of neurons in the human brain relative to any other mammalian brain. That is, that cats and dogs and rats and anteaters and so on have exactly the same types of neurons that human brains have. It's just that as brains become larger over evolutionary time, they reorganize themselves in interesting and important ways. So the interesting piece of information here, I think, is that, as you pointed out, this is a really, really popular story of brain evolution and brain function. People talk about, you know, their lizard brain hijacking the rest of the brain and
okay,
so on.
Okay, Lisa, we have to take a short commercial break, but after the break, we're going to continue with discussion of your new book, 7.5 Lessons About the Brain. And you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. And if you want to get on 100 radio stations, give us a call. The hotline number is 612-564-8135. Leave your name, call letters to the radio station and the website and the city you're calling from, and bingo, maybe you can get on Science Fantastic. So stay tuned as we talk about the brain.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors. Past results do not guarantee future performance.
Stock market have you nervous with all the massive fluctuations? With the hope for a COVID vaccine on the rise, shifting political landscape, and the election at an end, it's virtually impossible to guess what will happen next. With Vantage Point, you don't have to. Text MONEY to 411-411 to find out how our technology can forecast market trends up to 3 days in advance with incredible accuracy. Text MONEY to 411-411 to get what you need to stay ahead of market trends and find explosive moves before they happen. Vantage Point's patented technology analyzes huge quantities of global data in seconds. Stop guessing. Start predicting trends 72 hours in advance. Text MONEY to 411-411 and experience Vantage Point for free. Text MONEY to 411-411 so you can protect and grow your capital now. Don't wait. Text MONEY to 411-411.
Go to VantagePointSoftware.com for terms, conditions, and privacy policy.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
It's not over. Sadly, our nation is going through tough times again, with no end in sight, and nobody knows what might happen next year. That's why it's a good idea to plan ahead, so you aren't caught off guard. Nothing's more important than having enough food to eat, and we're here to help. We're My Patriot Supply, America's leading emergency preparedness company. We provide long-term emergency food that lasts up to 25 years in storage. When grocery stores run empty or disasters strike, our foods will be there when you need it most. Act now and secure at least a 4-week emergency food kit full of tasty meals that provide 2,000 calories a day. We have dozens of emergency food storage kits to choose from. When the government tells you not to go out, you can have the peace of mind that comes from being prepared. When you order from MyPatriotSupply.com, your food will arrive discreetly at your doorstep in no time. Prepare today. Time is short. MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
Do you feel like many of us? All the distractions in the world taking our minds and focus off what really needs to get done day to day? Well, Jeunesse has a dietary supplement called Mind to help with mental distraction, and it supports memory function. Go to GCNLife.com now to check it out. You're only at your best when your mind is at its best. Go to GCNLife.com or call toll free 844-443-6637. That's GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku as we explore with Professor Lisa Feldman Barrett one of the most complex objects in the known universe, and that is the human brain. And by the way, if you want to know more about Science Fantastic, go to my website, mkaku.org, mkaku.org. I've written 4 New York Times bestsellers, and we have on Facebook 4 million fans on Facebook. Well, Lisa, in the common popular literature, there's something called the marshmallow test, where you give children a choice of eating a marshmallow immediately or delaying it for a few hours, and then you get 2 marshmallows if you delay it. And that's supposed to be a metaphor for the conflict between the emotion for instant gratification, that is the desires of wanting to eat the marshmallow, versus the rational objective of delaying it and then having 2 marshmallows a few hours later. Well, has that held up? In other words, delayed gratification, is that one of the keys to success in life? Has some of these popular theories held up?
I think it's fairly safe to say that the concept of delayed gratification is something that most people are familiar with. And yes, it is related to success in many studies. But the explanation that you have one part of your brain which is emotional and a different part of your brain which is rational and they're in battle for your behavior is not really a correct explanation for delayed gratification.
And so you mentioned that it's an energy budget and time, that is time that evolution allotted to develop certain parts of the brain. So given the new thinking that you present, how do we look back at this earlier thinking that the brain evolved from the back, the lizard brain, and evolved in the front direction toward the center of the brain, the limbic brain, and finally to the front of the brain, which is the thinking human brain? How does that theory then have to be reinterpreted from your point of view?
I think the evidence shows really clearly that you have one brain. You have one brain made up of, in a human case, approximately 128 billion neurons. And those 128 billion neurons are constantly talking to each other and creating patterns. And those patterns, that's what your behavior and your experience emerge out of those patterns. And one of the interesting things that your brain is doing constantly is using your past to predict your future, using your past experience to predict what's going to happen to you in a moment from now or 10 minutes from now or 2 hours from now. And out of understanding this dynamic, we can explain things like delay of gratification and other phenomena that that we're used to experiencing.
Okay, well, let's do a science experiment. I'm a scientist. Let's go home tonight and try to teach your dog the meaning of tomorrow. Well, you'll find that dogs do have a sense of time, but the sense of tomorrow is beyond their comprehension, or at least we've never measured their ability to understand tomorrow, the next month, the next year. So in part four, your fourth lesson, you mentioned that the human brain is a prediction machine. So is that one of the main characteristics that separate us from the animals? That we do not live in the present. We don't live with instinct. We daydream. We think about the future. We think about a world even after we're dead. Animals don't do that to the best of our knowledge. So isn't that one of our defining characteristics as humans, that we are prediction machines?
I might put it a little differently. As far as we know, every brain on this planet is a prediction machine. It's just that an animal's brain will predict as far into the future or the past, using the past as is relevant for that animal's environment. So for humans, as you said, we actually have a lot of trouble staying in the present because we have brains that can do mental time travel so easily. We can remember into the past over decades and we can imagine futures that are 20, 30, 40 years from now, and sometimes even hundreds or thousands of years from now. A dog has also the capacity to predict, as we learned in Ivan Pavlov's famous experiments that he won the Nobel Prize for. But they predict on a much shorter time scale. And even single-cell creatures like bacteria can predict. They don't have brains. They have organelles that allow them to predict. And they're predicting on the order of minutes, not on the order of, weeks or months or years.
Okay, and some people even make the next jump, and that is that our ability to see the future, to predict alternate realities that don't exist, to see all the complexities of our decisions is related to intelligence. That people who are not, quote, unquote, so intelligent simply live in the immediate, the present, immediate gratification. What's in it for me now? While people who are more thoughtful, more forward-looking, quote, more intelligent, unquote, are the ones who see different alternate futures and pick the best ones. So the question is, has that held up? And for that matter, what about IQ? Has that held up after all these decades?
It's important to remember that IQ is the discussion about what IQ is somewhat different than the discussion of what intelligence is in the following sense. IQ is whatever an IQ test measures. It's a set of little tests that you take that predict how well you do on IQ tests. And it might predict how well you do in school and in very narrow, it predicts narrowly how well you're going to do, but it doesn't necessarily predict how well you're going to do in life. And some scientists think that there are many different types of intelligence. But I think one marker of intelligence is the capacity to create new knowledge out of what you already know. And the human brain, has this really amazing capacity to take bits and pieces of past experience and combine them in novel ways to create new knowledge, to be innovative, to be creative. And this is something that other animals do, but human brains do it really to a remarkable extent.
Okay, also, lesson number 7 in your book talks about the fact that the brain creates its own reality, a social reality, that laws, for example, don't exist in physics. There's no physics of laws. Laws are nothing but molecules floating in the air, as far as the physicist is concerned. But to a human being, laws are reality, that you have to do certain things or else you go to jail. So tell us a little bit about the fact that the brain lives in an imaginary world of social reality, that the brain creates a new kind of reality that animals don't have.
Right. So human brains can do many things that individually animals can do, maybe one or two of those things, but we can do them all together. We can communicate with each other. We can learn from each other. We can cooperate with each other. We can be creative with each other. And we also have the capacity to impose a function on something that it doesn't physically have on its own. So if you and I agree that a piece of paper is money, then we can trade that piece of paper for material goods like food. And that is social reality, the ability to collectively agree to impose a function on something that it doesn't normally have by virtue of its physical nature. And then poof, that reality exists. We do this all the time. In fact, almost all of civilization is this kind of reality. And it's a kind of reality that exists only when human brains are working together, whether they know it or not.
Okay, and also lesson number 6 in your book also helps to differentiate us from the animal kingdom, and that is that there's actually more than one kind of mind. We have one brain, of course, but the brain can exist in different minds and different mindsets, while animals have difficulty doing that. Could you elaborate?
Sure. A human brain is born under construction, meaning an infant brain is not a miniature adult brain. It's a brain that's waiting for wiring instructions from the world. And that world is a physical world, but it's also a social world. The way that we interact with our infants actually wires their brains to experience and act in particular ways. And one thing that we're doing is we are communicating information about a particular culture.
We have to take yet another short commercial break. Once again, you are listening to Science Fantastic. Our special guest is Professor Lisa Feldman Barrett. The book is called 7.5 Lessons About the Brain. And if you want to give us a call at 612-564-8135. Leave your name, call it into the radio station or the website, and the city you're calling from, and maybe you can get on 100 radio stations that carry Science Fantastic. So stay tuned as we continue to talk about the most mysterious object in the known universe sitting on your shoulders right now.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
USA Radio News.
I'm Jeremy Scott. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration late on Friday approved the COVID-19 vaccine from Pfizer and BioNTech. The largest vaccination campaign in U.S. history is expected to begin early next week, with the first doses going to healthcare workers and nursing home residents. Nearly 300,000 Americans have died from the virus. The United States Supreme Court has rejected Texas's lawsuit challenging results of the presidential election in 4 swing states. President Trump said on Twitter late Friday, Friday. The Supreme Court really let us down. No wisdom, no courage. Constitutional law professor Jonathan Turley on Fox News.
Many of these cases are being thrown out on standing or procedural grounds. And there are a lot of voters out there who believe that this election was not fairly done. And they don't feel like the evidence has been scrutinized.
The Electoral College meets to formally elect Biden as president on Monday. USA Radio News. Virginia's governor is not a fan of churches, especially during a pandemic.
Virginia Governor Ralph Northam, he's a Democrat, announced new coronavirus restrictions on Thursday and offered some advice for Virginians of faith and practicing their faith.
This year, we need to think about what is truly the most important thing. Is it the worship or the building? For me, God is wherever you are. You don't have to sit in the church pew for God to hear your prayers. Worship outside or worship online is still worship.
The governor also calling on faith leaders to lead the way and set an example. The governor, without proof, also blamed the spread of the virus in Virginia on congregations that he said acted carelessly in observing health precautions. From the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau, I'm Tim Berg.
This is USA Radio News.
We have all seen and perhaps used the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you ever noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? With bacteria and virus problems, sanitizers and hand washing are the first line of defense against infectious disease. GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam meeting or exceeding all requirements as set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration as a first aid antiseptic. When it comes to sanitizers, it only makes sense that it lasts till the next application and doesn't dry and crack your skin, inviting infection. For long-lasting alcohol-free sanitizing, come to GCNteam.com keyword antibacterial. That's GCNteam.com, antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203. 877-878-4203.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Introducing Reveal from GCNLife.com. Beverly Hills dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman invented Reveal, which contains polypeptides with natural botanicals and no parabens, sulfates, silicones, or dyes for a salon-quality hair growth product, Reveal. Here's Dr. Newman.
I have treated a lot of patients who lose their hair and they lose their confidence. We've created a unique set of polypeptides, which we call HPT6. The HPT6 contains the polypeptides from six different plants. The scalp infusion treatment should be used on wet or dry scalp. The Reveal hair care system is designed to be used for men and women alike.
Get Reveal at GCNLife.com with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So try Reveal today at GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637. Plus a discount up to 25% off for Reveal at GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Once again, our special guest today is Professor Lisa Feldman Barrett. She's a distinguished professor in neuroscience at Northeastern University with appointments at Harvard Medical School and Massachusetts General Hospital. And the book is called 7.5 Lessons About the Brain. Well, before we continue a discussion of the brain in your book, let's talk a little bit about Hollywood and how Hollywood portrays the brain. There's an urban legend that says that we only use 10% of our brain, that therefore 90% of our brain is unused, and if only we can tap into that 90%, we could become almost superhuman. Well, some scientists have tried to trace where that legend came from, and apparently that legend came from a comic book back in the 1950s. At the end of the comic book, they sometimes had trivial facts about science, and of course they would make up a lot of these facts, but apparently that's where it comes from. But now we have Sigmund Freud. Sigmund Freud says, well, there's an unconscious brain, a brain that is beyond our conscious realm, and it influences our thinking even without our knowledge. So, Lisa, what is the latest concerning whether or not we only use 10% of our brain? And was Freud correct in saying that there's an unconscious mind?
Well, you use all of your brain all of the time. I think that that's pretty clear. The evidence suggests that you're not using 10% of your brain. You're probably using more like 85 or 95% of your brain for every action you take and every experience you have. Most of what your brain is doing is unconscious. That is, most of what is happening in your brain, you don't have awareness of or access to. That's correct.
Okay. Well, moving on, you have many, many chapters in your book that are quite profound. Let's take a few of them. First of all, in chapter 2, you say that the brain, as a metaphor, is a network. So what do you mean by that, that the brain is a network?
Yeah, actually what I say is the brain is as a network is not a metaphor. That's actually a description of the brain's organization. So unlike saying that the brain, has three layers, or that the brain, you have a left side and a right side and so on, those are metaphors. But the brain as a network means that you have 128 billion neurons which are working together, and they're passing information back and forth. And the patterns they create allow you to have the thoughts and feelings and actions that you have. And it would be a metaphor to explain that network in relation to, say, the global network for air travel, which is what I do in the essay, in the lesson. So comparing your brain to the way that air travel works around the world, the way that airports work and air flights work and so on, that is a metaphor.
Okay, and also, again, using Hollywood as our main source of information for the public about the brain, there's something called the left brain and the right brain, where, at least in the popular literature, the left brain is more analytical, more focused, and the right brain is more holistic, more emotional, and less rational. And the two, of course, work together to create your personality. But has that held up? The left brain, right brain idea. Is that correct or not?
Not really. Not to our knowledge. So I would say that when it comes to processing language, it's clear that for many people, in fact, for most people, the left brain, the left part of the brain has
okay,
more...
Let's take another short commercial break. But after the break, we're going to continue with discussion of the book, 7.5 Lessons About the Brain by Professor Lisa Feldman Barrett. And you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call at 612-564-8135. And maybe you can get on 100 radio stations that carry Science Fantastic.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNloans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNloans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNloans.com. That's GCNloans.com.
Attention business owners body slammed by overwhelming debt. If your business is in trouble, hassled by creditors, if you're frustrated, finally fed up with big business bailouts while your business has been left for dead, please listen close. There's a brand new fast-track bankruptcy. Some have even called it the biggest small business bailout in American history. Designed for individuals and their businesses. And look, almost no one knows about this yet. My attorney wasn't even aware of it. The truth is, beating the system has never been easy because it's rigged in a sense against the little guy. But here's the jaw-dropping news nobody's talking about. They've literally just changed the system so that you can beat it. But only if you understand how the new game has to be played. Find out if you qualify at pocketsoflight.com. This government-backed small business repair program is still legal, but may not be renewed after the election. Fight back fairly, fight back ethically at pocketsoflight.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
The stress levels of Americans may be at an all-time high. From education to business to basic needs to politics, the 2020 pandemic-related stressors are pushing many of us to near breaking point. That's why you should consider the stress and pain-relieving products from Sunny-Bay.com, like our lavender neck wraps and pads infused with premium Washington lavender buds. They relieve tension and relax with a soothing scent of lavender. And lifestyle expert Jennifer Bonner recommends products from Sunny Bay.
Sunny Bay's hands-free neck wrap should be your go-to pain relief solution.
Give gifts to family and friends that relieve stress and pain. Give love and care by giving the best. Give pillows, neck wraps, and body wraps from sunny-bay.com, a Biomed DB design company. Just click sunny-bay.com. That's sunny-bay.com.
Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Today we're talking about the most complex object in the known universe. Scanning the stars in the heavens out to billions of light years, the most complex object in the known universe is sitting on your shoulder right now. So we're talking about 7.5 lessons about the brain with Professor Lisa Feldman Barrett. She's a distinguished professor of neurology at Northeastern University with appointments at Harvard Medical School and Massachusetts General Hospital. Where we last left off, we were talking about the fact that, well, Hollywood gives us a lot of our information about the human brain, but how much of it is really fact-based and scientifically correct? One Hollywood lore is the fact that we have two hemispheres of the brain, left and right. The left brain controls language, it controls mathematical ability, is the analytic brain that focuses on something. The right brain tends to be more holistic, tends to be more emotional, tends to look at the big picture. But, well, let's talk to a scientist. Has that basic dichotomy held up or not?
Yes, when it comes to language, primarily, and no, when it comes to everything else. When we process language and we form words and sentences, most people tend to use more of their left brain than their right brain. We're not born that way, but we develop that way. For some people, it's the opposite. They use more of their right brain than their left brain for language. But for most people, it's more of the left brain for language. But for all other functions, it's really distributed across both hemispheres. There's no difference in terms of analytical versus holistic thinking or anything like that.
Okay, well, moving on, in the third lesson in your book, you talk about little brains wire themselves. So we're talking about upbringing now. So how does the young mind interact with caregivers and thrive or not thrive in that circumstance?
Little brains are born under construction. They are waiting for wiring instructions from the world. Those wiring instructions can come from the physical world, the sights and sounds and smells of the physical world. So, for example, an infant's ability to see won't develop normally unless light waves are hitting the retina, the infant's eye, and being taken up to the brain. And similarly, some of those wiring instructions come from the social world. When we hug our babies, when we feed our babies, when we make eye contact with our babies, talk to our babies, sing to our babies, and so on, this social interaction is necessary for an infant's brain to wire itself normally. And this is how we transmit cultural information from one generation to the next to create different kinds of minds.
Now, this phenomenon called wolf children, children that were abandoned during the Middle Ages for reasons we don't understand, children that thrived or had to thrive in the forest or they would die of starvation. And a lot of these wolf children throughout history have been captured, have been analyzed, and they don't speak a language. Your period at which you can learn a language bypassed them, and they never really learn social skills. They never really learn how to become human. So doesn't that mean, therefore, that our upbringing has an awful lot to do with our ability to speak a language and to understand social cues?
Yes. Basically, we have the kind of nature that requires a nurture. We have the kind of genes that require that we have social interactions with people in order to learn the things that we need to learn to live a human life. So it's not that genes are unimportant. It's that genes give us the capacity to wire our brains to the world that we live in. And that is, in part, what makes us human.
And if we're deprived of that, how do we turn out? I mean, some people, of course, blame their childhood on all sorts of problems they have as adults. But how does it work? If you are socially deprived as a child, what happens when you grow up and become an adult?
Well, there's a difference between having adversity in your background as a child and being really deprived of any social contact whatsoever. So what we know is that we need some contact with other people to develop normally.
Okay, Lisa, we have to take another short commercial break, but after the break, we're going to continue with discussion of your book, 7.5 Lessons About the Brain. And you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call if you want to get on 100 radio stations. The number to call is 612-564-8135. Leave your name, call letters to the radio station and the website you're listening to, and the city you're calling from, and maybe you can get on national radio.
Attention real estate investors. Do you need cash immediately? If you own one or multiple rental properties, you can use your equity to get cash out fast. The best part is we don't need tax returns or even a good credit score. At America's Loan Source, we are not a bank and we don't have bank rules. We make the decisions to loan you money and there's no limit how much we can give you. Some clients have gotten as much as $500,000 or more within days. Use the money any way you want. If you own one rental property or 100, and COVID has left you in a cash crunch, we can help you turn your equity into fast cash. Call now for details and close in as little as 10 days and get the cash you need. 800-507-6553. 800-507-6553. 800-507-6553. That's 800-507-6553.
We've all seen and perhaps use the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you noticed how it dries your skin and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam meeting or exceeding all requirements set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration. Come to GCNteam.com. Keyword antibacterial or call 877-878-4203.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes,
Take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Once again, our special guest today is Professor Lisa Feldman Barrett, author of a new book, 7.5 Lessons About the Brain, which of course is the most complex, most mysterious object in the entire known universe. Well, before the break, we were talking about upbringing and whether or not we can blame how we turned out on our upbringing. However, there is a professor, Professor Licken, that has analyzed twins that were separated at birth and tried to see if there's a correlation between youthful upbringing and adult behavior, including crime. And he said there's a statistical relationship between children who are unsocialized, fatherless, and male, and becoming a criminal. Now, of course, the correlation is not 100%, but in the main, just looking at the raw statistics, he claims, unsocialized, fatherless males tend to make up most of our criminals. So, what are your thoughts? Have these things held up? That is, studies of children and tracing them over the decades to see how they turn out as adults?
I think that's a pretty extreme claim, actually. So the fact that most people who are arrested and convicted of a crime, especially violent crimes, are male, I think that is pretty well known. But the idea that someone who is fatherless is therefore unsocialized is an assumption. That's an assumption that goes maybe a little bit too far. Normally, brains require the input to develop normally, require social interaction with other people, including caregivers who love and take care of those children. And in extreme circumstances where children are deprived, not children who are in adversity, meaning they're deprived of some social care, but children who are completely deprived of social care don't develop normally. We know that from the Romanian orphanage situation where children were warehoused in orphanages. I think, as far as I know, the predictors of criminality are highly varied, and I don't think that other than being male, I don't know that the rest of those statements are really defensible.
Okay, let me ask you another question about human nature. Some people think that there's a core set of values that we consider human nature. Other people have said, no, there are personality types. For example, I read one article which said that there are about 9 or so, plus or minus, distinct personality types that are reproducible. You can test these statistically that, yes, people tend to be pigeonholed in these categories. But what are your thoughts? Is there simply one core human nature, or are there many, many distinct personalities, which is a reproducible, testable idea?
As far as we know, when it comes to humans, variation is the norm, meaning that there is no set of core personality characteristics or features that characterize every human on this planet. For every feature that you can think of that you want to claim as universal, you can find someone who doesn't have it. And even for classification systems of personality, there's really no classification system that anybody has come up with that is universal across all humans on the planet.
Okay, well, also, lesson number 6 in your book talks about the fact that the brain can make more than one kind of mind, that we are in some sense plastic, and our brains can actually go back and forth between different kinds of universes, different kinds of worlds. So how does that work? And is it possible that you can have, therefore, multiple personalities? That's another Hollywood theme found in several movies, that a person is unaware of the fact that there are several personalities living in the same brain. Is that just a bunch of nonsense that Hollywood has cooked up? Or are multiple personalities really possible?
Well, I think there's a big scientific debate about whether multiple personalities are possible. It's certainly great entertainment, and particularly when you need, you know, villains in a superhero movie. But in general, what I would say is that it is true that the human brain bathes in, you know, interactions with other human brains can create more than one kind of mind. We have different cultures and we have people, and those cultures are very, very different from one another. For example, in our culture, we have thoughts and feelings, and in other cultures, people don't distinguish a thought from a feeling. For them, it's the same kind of event. So because we are born under construction, we can transfer cultural knowledge, different cultural knowledge, to those human brains and create different kind of minds. And if we go from one culture to another as adults, we can acculturate. We can learn the customs and values and behaviors of that culture, and have more than one kind of a repertoire of experiences and behaviors. That isn't really, well, I wouldn't describe that as having lots of different personalities. If I did, it would be a very colorful metaphor that I would use at a dinner party.
Okay, also, you mentioned evolution many times in your book, but if you take a look at the dinosaurs were around for over 200 million years, and none of them, not a single one, to the best of our knowledge, developed a large brain like us. So the question is, why did we develop a large brain? Some people say that the dinosaurs were well suited for their environment, therefore there was no need to become intelligent. Well, any thoughts? Because we have to wind up at the present time, unfortunately. Any thoughts? We have about a minute.
We developed a large brain in stages, probably the notion is that we developed very large bodies and we lived together in groups, and that produced a lot of variability that we had to deal with, which required large brains.
Okay, well, once again, our special guest is Professor Lisa Feldman-Barrett. You are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. And the hotline number is 612-564-8135.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutriMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, simulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.